Hello, everybody. I wanted to send an apology in the beginning of the episode. I have the sniffles and the sickies. I sound a little off, a little gnar, kind of a little surf. So just wanted to apologize. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you enjoy, and I'll see you later.
Hello, and welcome to Seemotionals. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastical.
Wonderful.
It is the ocean-themed podcast. Everything ocean-related, conservation, animals, cleanup efforts, and more.
And all sorts of environments.
Even space.
Well, we haven't gotten to space yet. I'm not sure.
No,
we can talk much about that. I'm sure there's something we can talk about.
But I'm Anthony.
I'm Kira.
And we're here to bring you a new episode.
About new things.
And new animals on the horizon.
Newly discovered animals is what we're going to share with you today. Because did you know there's still animals being discovered to this day, which is really crazy because you would think we've already seen everything. But no, there's still animals up here.
Earth has more for us in store.
So we're going to share some that are recently discovered and talk a little bit about them.
Yes. I can't wait.
First one is interesting, mostly because of its name. People are just getting kind of strange now with their animal naming. So this was a discovery of a millipede, and it's been named after Taylor Swift. Its name is Narnia Swifte.
Is this related to Narnia, possibly, do you think?
There was nothing about that. I didn't hear anything about that.
Or is that like the genus name? I think that's the genus name.
Yeah, that's the genius name.
Genius name?
That's the genus name. I don't know how to say that word.
Genus.
Genus name.
Just say it British. How would you say it British?
Genius. Genus. I have trouble saying that word. But this millipede was discovered with 16 other newly discovered millipede species. And it was part of an extensive research project to sequence the DNA of species in the Narnia genus, known as the twisted claw millipedes.
Mm.
So named for its twisted and flattened claws of their front legs. So this was one that they have discovered. The lead study author, his name is Derek Hennen. He is a researcher at Virginia Tech. And apparently he's a big fan of Taylor Swift.
Of course.
And he decided to name the millipede Narnia Swifte after her.
It's me, Swifte. All right, copyright, but we can't go any further.
Its common name is Swift Twisted Claw Millipede. I wonder if she knows about this and it's like, hey, you know, a bug was named after you.
Hey, Swift, a bug was named after you.
Taylor Swift, if you're listening, this is for you. A bug was named after you.
Whoa.
That's fancy. Swifte play a vital role in their ecosystem. They release nutrients into the soil and forest floors. They eat decaying leaf matter, and the millipedes break down the organic matter, adding decomposition.
Well, dang.
All of the newly discovered species measure between 0.7 and 1.5 inches long. They have white legs and brown or black bodies spotted with red, white, or orange.
Hmm.
So this isn't the first bug named after, or the first animal named after different celebrities.
I would imagine not.
Okay, there's a tree hopper named after Lady Gaga named Kakaya Gaga. I might have said that first part wrong. Elton John. There was a shrimp-like crustacean named Lecothoi Eltoni.
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 I don't know.
Sorry, I'm butchering these names a little bit, but they're in some of
imagine,
the Latin forms.
Like being a scientist and you're like, I've discovered a new creature and broken the boundaries of science. Good sir, what will you call this creature? The Narnia Swiftay. Is that just because you like Taylor Swift and not because it looks like Taylor Swift? Aye, it is for my love of Taylor Swift. Like, what goes through their minds when they're just like, yeah, let me.
They really like
better.
The person. That's like maybe a big passion of theirs. Like,
yeah.
But there was also one named after Shakira, a wasp named Eloides Shakire.
Oh wow, I mean they're great names. They're great names.
So it's pretty funny that like their animals, like I guess the newly discovered animals, you know, are being just named whatever the person discovering it wants to name it.
Whatever it is, it's there.
And so there's a lot of interesting names.
Throwaway Latin. Here we come, new age naming.
Well, there's still Latin in the name.
Kind of, yeah.
And I butchered a lot of those names. That was all.
All right, I'm going to move into the ocean on our next venture here and cover the Roosevelt Ferry Race.
Sounds beautiful.
It is Sir Hilabras Finifenma. And the Roosevelt Ferry Race is a creature, a bright, colorful fish that looks sort of like a rainbow. And
it's beautiful.
You love it?
Yeah, it looks like a rainbow.
It looks like legit candy in the ocean. Unicorn of the sea, beautiful fish. So this little guy was actually discovered in the 1990s, but they classified it as another species of race known as C. robusquamus, which is the red velvet fairy race. And although it looks similar, it's more red in color, and so they messed up. So they completely named this entirely new species, just thought it was another species, and then they hadn't seen it for like 30 years. Mm-hmm. And they just finally saw this new species again, and they were like, wait a minute, this is a new species. And so they thusly named it the Rose-Veiled Fairy Race. It's named after a flower. Finifenma is the Divehi word for rose. And it glows in the dark. So at nighttime and deep levels in the ocean, you'll see it glowing in the dark.
Oh, wow.
You won't see it when you take a dive either, because this fish lives in the mesophotic zone, which means middle light or middle of nowhere, I like to call it, in the ocean.
Hmm.
Lives in the middle of nowhere. Yeah, also on top of that, not much is known about this particular fish, as they just rediscovered it this year, earlier in the year. So they do think that it just operates like a red velvet fairy race. But I'm kind of about this, like, you know, naming convention of fish after food.
After food?
Yeah, like red velvet.
Oh, red velvet, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
it
this
looks like a betta fish to me.
Yeah, it's an ocean betta fish.
Yeah, I like the red velvet name. I like this name very much, Rose-Veiled Fairy Wrasse.
Yeah, I think this one's a little bit more pinkish in color.
Okay.
Yeah, he's beautiful.
Yeah, very beautiful. Hello. The next one is the bright orange bat. Have you ever heard of an orange bat?
I have not.
Well, now you have.
Ooh.
These are found in the West African country of Guinea, and there were scientists working there, and they discovered this new orange furred species of bat. So it was a rare discovery. They just happened to come across it in the isolated Nimba mountain range. So they have a bright orange fur with, they have black wings, and it's like any other bat on Earth. This discovery they found back in 2018, but still newly somewhat discovered. And just like a lot of these animals, there isn't a ton known about them because one, they're newly discovered, and two, usually when they're being discovered recently, there's not a large amount of them. So, and they don't see them very often, so they don't know too much about some of these newly discovered animals. They just this one, they just know it lives in like a very specific area, and they found them flying out of an old mining tunnel, and they think that these human-made habitats may be crucial to the species' continued existence because that's just where they are living. So they're hiding in these human-made habitats. I don't know where they were before that.
Yeah,
but
maybe
that is their
maybe
newfound
some
home.
Bats like flew down into the mine and like turned orange from like copper or something down there.
Interesting theory. But yeah, you look them up. They're really cool to just see and visualize. So we don't see that very often. But they do have photos of them.
Yeah, we'll have to check them out. Everybody check out the orange bat. Or bright orange bat.
Bright orange bat.
Okay, I'm going to cover something out of the animal world for my next one. We're going to jump into the plant kingdom here. And I'm going to talk about the giant water lilies.
Ooh.
Which is called Victoria Boliviana, which is very fancy.
It sounds like a human name.
Yeah.
There's probably someone out there named that.
Boliviana, come here.
So maybe it actually was named after a person, I'm thinking.
They named it actually after the Queen of England, which was England's queen in 1837. But the Boliviana part is because most giant water lilies tend to be found in the Amazon, and the previous one was Amazonica, so they just decided to name another South American country, I guess. So Boliviana.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a new giant water lily, which has come from the, I think it was in the Royal Botanical Gardens.
That sounds fancy.
Kew's Herbitarium. There is a facility, it's a botanical garden, that is called Kew's Herbitarium, and apparently, this thing has been growing in there for some 177 years and was never noticed.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know how they managed to just skip over like these giant lily pads. Yeah, it was undiscovered in this herbitarium. They said that they must have been growing there for some 177 years. They even think that, you know, if they ever did see it, they might have mistaken it for Victoria Amazonica. And just didn't bat an eye and never, like, got close to it. But
poor thing.
An entirely new species of lily pad, some of the biggest there is. I actually like that, like, when it rains, there's, like, a wall around the lily pad. And so it keeps the water in. It's really interesting.
It's like a little, it makes a little pool.
Yeah, you could, like, go in it. Have a little pool day.
Well, how big are they?
Big enough for you to fit in. See?
Those are really cool.
Yeah. So they grow to about 3 meters wide usually. So if you're anywhere around, I don't know, 6 feet, you could probably fit in it. 6 feet or under, most likely like barely fit in it. If you're like 5'4", perfect.
Oh, that's me.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So yeah, again, not much is known about Victoria Boliviana, whether it's like a new species in the wild or if it's growing in the wild at all. It might just be like a crossbreed between like what they have at the botanical gardens here. It was discovered a few months ago, and we hope to find out more about this giant water lily.
They're
other than that
beautiful.
They're beautiful.
They are really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
They seem majestic.
And if you guys ever want to check out the botanical garden, by
I
the
do.
Way, it's in Kew Gardens in London.
Oh, nice.
So just take a trip into London.
I would love to.
That's all I had for the giant water lily, though. Definitely worth checking out a picture or two and checking out Kew Gardens.
I would love to.
It's just crazy how, like, these things are just unnoticed. Like, you know, you have this place.
Well, it's more like they thought it was something else. And a few of these species, when doing research, I noticed the same thing, is that they're similar ones, so they thought it might have been just that one. But then when they did more investigation,
they actually just took a look and, like, went up to it and went, like, that's not it.
Because the next one I have is also similar.
Okay.
It's called the Atolla Reynoldsi, and this one is very strange.
It's named after Ryan Reynolds.
It's not, but the way that it looks reminds me of like something computer generated. It's very strange.
Oh.
It's a deep sea crown jelly, and it has a distinctive thorny projections around the margin of its bell. So it was actually named after Jeff Reynolds, and he was the first volunteer at the Monterey Bay Aquarium. And he was honored for all of his contributions at the aquarium and all the volunteering and conservation that he did. So that's why it was named after him. The deep sea crown jelly Atolla is found worldwide, and it can be abundant in deep water. And there's 10 species in this genus. The Reynoldsi has only been seen a handful of times. So the actual, like, Atolla genus has been seen many times, but this specific one, it's only been seen a few times.
Huh.
And this one is larger in size than the other species. The largest that's been collected is 5.1 inches, making this one of the largest ones in the genus.
Not entirely too big.
No, just compared to the other ones.
It looks like something definitely out of like a sci-fi
CGI.
Isn't
it strange? Yeah. It looks fake. That's why I wanted to talk about it, because it like looks so strange to me. So you should definitely look that up. Like other deep sea crown jellies, a Reynoldsi has a furrowed bell, a deep groove that runs around its bell, separating the domed bell from the wide margin with thick segments. Hopefully you got all that. The crown in the Reynoldsi has warty papillae and spiked ridges.
Ooh.
And a Reynoldsi also has a distinct gut that is shaped like a Greek cross.
Huh.
They live in the depths of 3,323 to over 10,000 feet deep in the water, which is like very, very deep.
That's extremely deep.
Yeah. But they're pretty cool.
Yeah, they definitely look interesting.
Mm-hmm.
They definitely look like a computer program.
They look a little scary.
My next creature I'm going to cover is a sponge crab. Now, sponge crabs are not necessarily new. There's so many, probably like 40 different species of sponge crabs. But the one I'm going to cover is Lamarckdromia. Beagle. So this bro, he washed up on the shores of Australia, and a family, they were surfing out there, found them, and decided to give them to the Western Australian Museum for Identification. And,
I'm sorry, who are you?
I'm doing the narration right now, so,
all right.
When the family gave it to them, they took a look at the sponge crab and found, golly gee, this is a new species. We've never seen this before. So they named it after Beagle. The reason it was named after Beagle is it was actually Charles Darwin's ship, the HMS Beagle, which he had used to travel in the 1830s when he was gathering data that led to his book on evolution. But yeah, it was found in Australia. It's a new crab altogether. It uses its spongy, hairy-like body, which looks really cool, by the way, to blend in, camouflage, and, you know, make sure that other octopus and other predators don't grab it. So, yeah, this fluffy crab dude, he pretty much just acts like normal sponge crabs. I mean, they eat, like, sea squirts and shrimp and other such things and some shells as well, and just try to avoid anything bigger like octopus and, what are those fish in the bottom of the sea? The fish that pop out of the sand? I can't remember their name right now. Mudfish? Frogfish. Frogfish are their predators as well. And yeah, I just think they're really cool. They have the hairs on their body, like all over their body, and it just makes them look like they're a sponge that you can wring out. And actually, on top of that, there's not much else known about this particular species as of yet. So I don't have any cool, fun information about them.
Alrighty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beagle.
It's a beagle.
It's a water beagle.
Is it?
No.
Alright. The next one is a gummy squirrel.
Gummy squirrel.
And no, it's not a candy.
Dang it.
No.
I was hoping.
It's not.
Pretty sure they have gummy squirrel candy somewhere.
But this gummy squirrel is found in the deep abyss, and it looks like a stretchy half-peeled banana. Yes, I said that correctly.
So this is not a real squirrel.
It's not a squirrel. It's not gummy. It's not a banana.
Oh.
But it's kind of all of those together. Oh. It looks very interesting. So when I look at this animal, I don't see a squirrel, but I do see a banana. So I think it should be called the gummy banana.
I like that better.
But it was named due to its resemblance to the land-dwelling furry animal, the squirrel.
Maybe because of the tail.
And it has a tail. It's speculated to use its tail for a sail to hitch a ride on the deep ocean current. So
what
it
a
can
bro.
Move better. And this was discovered in the summer of 2018. And they were lurking on the western edge of an abyss located between Hawaii and Mexico. Roughly 16,400 feet below the sea surface. So they are very deep down there. Like many deep sea creatures, there's little to be known about the gummy squirrel. And it's hard to research something that lives so far down. But yeah, they are yellow and they think that they have this, it's like a adaptation for survival designed to steer away predators, like indicating the presence of a poisonous chemical. That's
interesting.
Could be why it's yellow. That's its, what would you call it? What is the word? When the animal has a specific thing to, like, confuse other animals.
Camouflage? Defense mechanism?
Yeah, I guess it's one of its defense mechanisms to just trick other animals that it's a poison. But I would think they might think it's a banana and then they want to eat it.
Water banana.
It's a very strange looking creature. Like, some of these creatures just blow my mind when I look at them because I'm like, what? How did this even become a thing?
What is this and why did biology do this?
Very strange. The bottom of it just reminds me of like a vacuum cleaner. The cute little guys.
There's a cute little guy.
Alrighty.
I got a cute little guy coming up.
Oh?
Yeah, I got the Chicoree Fire Salamander. Or Chiriquee Fire Salamander. And this man is called in Latin genus name, Bulitglossa cathyleticae.
So he's red.
He bright red. So he breathes fire, he's flies, he's a dragon. No, I'm just kidding. He was named Fire Salamander for his fiery skin color. And he covers the western highlands of the Chiriquee province in Panama, which is why he's called the Chiriquee Fire Salamander. Yes, he was just recently discovered, and yes, the reason why he was discovered was due to deforestation, and yes, he is threatened by habitat loss. So,
as a lot of these animals are.
Yes. So, not much is known about this guy, but we did just discover him, and he is critically endangered already. Oh. Yeah, so pretty much similar characteristics to most salamanders, foot webbing, maxillary tooth numbers that are known for many salamanders. And the discovery goes to the honor of Kathy Ledeck, which is a conservationist, which is why its scientific name is Cathyleticae. And yeah, these things only are like 46 meters in length. Or millimeters in length. Very tiny little guys.
They're not tiny, are they?
46 millimeters.
How many inches is that?
I have no clue.
I don't know millimeters. 1.8 inches, so okay.
Yeah, so pretty small. You know when you gotta say something's in millimeters if it's pretty small. And the skin is like a salmonish red color. It's got pink little feet. And darker red on the back towards the spine. And yeah, that's all we really know about them. Don't have much else. Oh, but one cool fact is that it does live on elevation. So it was discovered 1,900 meters above sea level in the mountains.
Next, we have a cute, cute little guy.
Oh.
A Japan pig.
Like a pig pig?
No. A Japanese pygmy seahorse.
Oh!
Have you heard of the pygmy seahorses?
I've heard of pygmy seahorses, yes.
Right. Well, this is a species of it.
Oh, okay.
This is the Japanese pygmy seahorse.
Oh, but they just call it Japan Pig.
Yeah, that's another name for it. It was discovered off the coast of southeastern Japan. And they are super tiny, super tiny little seahorses. They're
the cutest one.
They're between 14 and 16 millimeters. So I believe that's...
not even an inch.
I believe it's like half an inch. It's about half an inch, these little seahorses. Like, so cute and tiny.
Aw, little babies.
They're hard to even see with the naked eye, especially, I'm sure, if they're babies. They're probably hard to see. They inhibit the shallow waters, blending in with the environment. I know for some time, like, they weren't discovered because they're hard to see.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But the Japanese has a colorful array of spots, a range to be known what's described as a paisley pattern, acting as camouflage. So that's another reason why they were probably newly discovered, because they're tiny and they are camouflaged.
Mm-hmm.
They're very active. They like to swim around each other. They like to hang on to each other's tail. And then they'll suddenly like dart back and come off. They'll just kind of jump onto each other like little monkeys.
Oh, that's cute.
But they are suffering globally due to habitat degradation. How do you say that?
Degradation.
Degradation. As well as their use as ornamental souvenirs in aquarium exhibits and in traditional Chinese medicine.
Oh, interesting.
The legal and illegal trade of these unique creatures is threatening populations, with 20 million seahorses estimated to be traded for Chinese medicine each year and hundreds of thousands captured for aquariums. So I hope they don't put them into little keychain things.
Oh, me neither.
They're so cute, and I was going to say sweet, but I don't know how they are.
I'm sure they're sweet.
Did you look it up?
I've never heard of a seahorse biting.
Does that make something sweet?
Yes.
If it doesn't bite?
Yes. All right. The last thing that I have here. I hope you brought your popcorn Harry Potter fans, because right now I have the best Harry Potter animal that has ever been discovered. And yes, it is in Harry Potter.
So it's not newly discovered. Maybe it's a few years old?
Well, no. This was actually named after Harry Potter, but...
oh, it's not. You said it was in Harry Potter.
I'm making a joke.
Oh.
So, yes, I am talking about everyone's favorite train ride snack that Ron had messed up on.
The chocolate frog.
Now, this is a new creature that was discovered in the Amazon in the rare peatlands. Pretty much looks like a chocolate frog. When you look at it, it looks like you can eat it, but please don't, because...
it's not food.
It is not food. It is a living being. It is in a part of the undisturbed rainforest that many people have yet to have gone in because of the hardships that are over there. Lots of deadly diseases and bugs. So discovery was made in a rapid check in the Putumayo Basin in the Peatlands, which is a conservation area that no one's allowed to go in. And this is just all the more reason why the scientists want to start going in this area and conserving it more, is new species like this. So the reason they named a chocolate frog was, again, from Harry Potter. He's just very shiny. He looks very chocolatey. I really want to eat him, but I have to keep reminding myself not to.
When I look up chocolate frog on Google to look at a photo of it, the most of the thing that comes up is just the actual, like, snack.
Yeah.
The chocolate frog, like the Harry Potter chocolate frog you can buy from, I think, Universal or wherever.
That one you can eat.
But, like, well, I guess after scrolling a bit, you'll actually find the real chocolate frog.
So I think what you might want to look up is its genus name, which is... Synapteranus danta.
I'm sorry, I can't spell that.
Like synapter.
Synapteranus.
Like Uranus, but right, it's
synapt. I think I looked it up. I didn't quite spell it right, but I found it. They're very small, if this is how small they
yes,
are.
Yes, so they are not more than an inch. They're not more than like a centimeter.
They are super tiny. Very tiny frogs.
They're around 17 millimeters, So again, like a half inch here. Not much, again, is known about them. I can't really speak on them. Sometimes they have been seen with yellow or orange spots over the dark chocolatey color of them. But a lot of them do just have that chocolate dark color. They have pure black eyes, black as night. And they have a slender, like a more slender body shape than other frogs. They don't peat out towards the sides and the bottom. And they love to dig down into the ground. They also were found living under the roots of clusia trees, so they can blend in as it's a dark brown tree. They have a long snout, longer snout than most frogs, and its population is unknown. This frog was very recently discovered, and I think it was actually discovered by Germán Chávez. At the Peruvian Institute of Herpetology, and he actually put it on Twitter, and it gained a massive viral outreach, and all his tag for the picture under Twitter was smooth little fella.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
He does look very smooth.
He does.
He looks really soft and shiny and
smooth. Smooth little fella, smoothing down.
Very nice.
I guess the common name for this frog, since it resembles a tapir, is the tapir frog.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think that's what they're going to call it, is the tapir frog, because it does have a very slender snout, almost like a tapir. All right, well, that was all the animals we had for you guys today. The newly discovered animals of 2022. I'm sure there's more.
No, they're not all from 2022.
All right. Well, a few of them.
I don't think there was enough just at 2022. So some of them are a few years old.
Some of them have been...
They're all recent, like within the past few years.
Really? I feel like all mine, aside from the lily pad and the fish, were all newly discovered this year.
No, a few of mine were a few years old.
Oh, okay. So yeah, three of mine, the sponge crab, the chicory, fire salamander, and the chocolate frog were discovered this year. And the giant water lily and rose-veiled fairy wrasse were rediscovered.
Okay.
So that wraps up our episode. We hope you learned something. We hope you like the new animals that have been recently discovered. We'll definitely, if we can find some new animals that have been discovered this year, and
we'll see if there's any new ones that come up. Maybe a dinosaur next year. We'll see.
Yeah, you know, dinosaur sightings have been popping up over the last year, so
they have
on social media.
Definitely, like new fossil discoveries of new dinosaurs.
Yeah,
I see that.
Yeah, there was actually two new fossil discoveries of extinct dolphins discovered in Scotland. Yeah, they're actually I think what they said was they're the missing link between ichthyosaurs, those like dolphin alligators.
Yeah.
And modern dolphins. They said they're like the missing link, but scientists have previously thought that they weren't related at all. I don't know. It's like a long scientific dilemma. So let's stay tuned for that information, what the scientists say, and we'll carry on.
We hope you have a good night or day.
And safe travels, and enjoy the heat where you are, or if you're in the snow, bundle up. Enjoy your studies or your plane travels or your car rides, or you're lounging on the couch or in bed or wherever you are.
Why do you mumble so much at the end?
Because I don't want to say goodbye to our lovely friends.
You just want to stay on all night.
I want to just talk to everyone all night, mostly just you and our audience. And
let's just stay on and just talk about a circus.
Yeah, well, it just hit 40 minutes, so I'm going to say goodbye.
talk about different ways that you can help friends do circus stuff.